I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
As we see some movement at the takeoff zone, it's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry, this thing holding open, it spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit, spits him out. Comes out after the spit, gets spat out of another good-looking wave here.
Spit, spit, spit.
We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got it. Welcome to the show, Spit. We're here at the Shack Library, and David Lee Scales, Scott Bass here with you. It is Tuesday. What are you doing? You're looking
just
at my notes?
Just checking out your notes. Go ahead.
This is an email from a listener.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. It is October 22nd. It's 9:30 in the morning or thereabouts. And
we're only 30 minutes behind schedule today.
I know.
Why are you so disrespectful of my time?
Well, to tell the truth, I got a text from you that said you were going to be 10 minutes late.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Shoot. Dang it.
Yes.
Why are you so spiffy?
Every once in a while I shower, you know?
Every once in a while. Well, yeah. Looks good on you.
Actually, I'm doing a podcast after this, which is why I had to do a hard out at 11:15 because I have a nooner in San Clemente.
So you dress up for your podcasts?
For certain people.
Wow, who is this person?
No. All I did was put on a collared shirt.
You cut your hair and combed it.
Well, you're still my hair was cut last week, and it was just because it needed to get cut.
You look nice today is all I'm saying, right. Except you're still not wearing shoes.
No, you can't wear shoes. When you get out of the car, I don't wear shoes in the car, so when you just get out of the car and roll right into a meeting with you, I don't need shoes.
You go, so in your car, is it sandals that you're kicking off, or you're actually lacing up shoes?
No, I drive barefoot, and I have sandals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So your footwear to your meeting is sandals.
Yeah.
Okay. Who are you interviewing?
Jeff Devine.
Wow.
Surf photographer, legend.
Wow.
On the Mount Rushmore of surf photographers. If I was thinking about this, that was going to be one of my questions to him. If there was a Mount Rushmore, four figureheads that really speak to the history and the legend of surf photography, who would those four photographers be?
Stoner? Grannis?
Those are good, definitely good choices.
I mean, I'm Survey? No?
Maybe. I mean, those are...
I don't know.
There's got to be... Look at it like this.
It's such a vast period of time, it's hard to pick four. You'd have to pick one from each.
Kind of, yeah. That's kind of... Yeah. You've got Severson,
yeah.
Ron Stoner, Leroy Grannis. Before that, you've got guys like, I want to say, Don James, I think. And I know I'm missing a real legendary older guy. And then, but like in the era where I grew up, there's where really surf photography sort of blossomed, I would suggest to you, when they're swimming at pipe and stuff and doing crazy stuff. You know, you've got Dan Merkel, Bob Barber, Jeff Devine, Steve Wilkings, Aaron Chang, Ted Grambo, Jeff Hornbreaker. You've got so many guys. Like, there's like a lot of guys. Brian Bielman. I know I'm missing. He's a Survey. But there's Australian guys. And then... So I guess from the 70s, I'm thinking from the 70s, which is sort of Jeff Devine's era, right? I mean, he's still taking photography, surf photos, but when you think of some of his iconic stuff, although he was around in the 80s and 90s too. I mean, he was working at Surfer Magazine in the 90s and 2000s. So I don't know. It's the Mount Rushmore of surf photography. It's an interesting, because then there's like John Witzig from Australia. Australians we're not even thinking about that need to be thought about. Right?
Rushmore's too... there's not enough slots.
Who's the guy, the classic Aussie guy? His name's... I'm missing it right now. He was a kneeboarder. legendary photographer guy, but anyway, there's a bunch of them. Yeah, anyway, the Mount Rushmore. So if it was older guys, like the founding father types, then it helps narrow it down.
Yeah. I wonder how Rushmore was selected. You know, like the actual Mount Rushmore itself, how do they pick those four?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's great documentaries on it. It's a federal park, right? It's a federal park?
I mean, at this point it is. Did it start as a private?
I don't know. We need to look into that. I want to say that it started as some guy's just like hobby, and then somebody's like, this is insane. Let's give him some money. And then somebody threw some money at it. And then somebody goes, I'm from the... Who's on Rushmore? Can you name the four presidents? Isn't Teddy Roosevelt?
Yeah, Roosevelt's the weird one. Yeah, the one that like is more modern.
Yeah.
But Roosevelt, Lincoln.
Washington.
So who would the fourth be?
Jefferson, maybe?
Could be Jefferson. That would make sense if it was like... But you get
the
feeling that
the Teddy Roosevelt Foundation goes, hey, since you're doing this, let's throw you some money and go ahead and put Teddy on there.
Yeah, that's actually a good point.
I don't know. Teddy was a pretty powerful president.
But it's still... Yeah, so it's, Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, and Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt did so much for founding national parks.
That could be it.
Makes sense.
You know what else I've always thought about Rushmore is how did they decide it was finished?
I think they just said, we've had enough. We give up. Yeah, there's still rubble at the bottom of the thing.
There's rubble at the bottom, and some of the faces, like Washington's is very prominent and has kind of his full face and some of his hair. Whereas Lincoln, you only get like half of his face. It's showing basically the first depth, the first level of depth of his face. You don't get ears or anything like that.
Yeah.
So at some point they're just chiseling. They go, you know what? After 70 years.
How long did they do it?
Putting down the chisel.
It must have been 15 or 20 years.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'm not sure. I could try to pull it up. It was authorized on March 3rd, 1925, and was completed in 1941. So 16
years.
That doesn't seem like that long, because the other one, Crazy Horse, they've been working on forever and they're still working on it.
What's Crazy Horse? I don't even know what you're talking about.
There's near Mount Rushmore, they have a giant carving of Crazy Horse in the side of a cliff, like the same idea, but
that sounds pretty cool.
Crazy Horse, and they've been working on that, I feel like, forever, and it's still not done.
I haven't even heard about that.
And who picks
the
sculptors?
Like I said, I think Rushmore, there was just some crazy guy that was just started doing it. And they're like, wow, look at this guy go.
Yeah.
It's our land, but let him have it.
So when you look, like I obviously was just in Italy, and you see these things that take hundreds of years to make, like the Duomos, these big, cathedrals. And there's no one artist that's responsible for them. Like, first of all, it's a feat of engineering that they were able to do these things way back when they did them. And the size of the stones, like, how do they even move these stones? But when you look at things like the Sistine Chapel, which is attributed to Michelangelo, obviously, he's the artist. He didn't do most of the work.
Right.
He had all these apprentices.
Ceiling, right?
Didn't he? No, he had all these apprentices painting for him, like students from his classes and stuff that are doing the actual brushwork.
Oh, interesting.
Which is weird.
Did he sketch it or something, and then had them fill in the color?
So each individual panel is a story in and of itself, and they're all biblical stories, obviously. And so I don't know how he decided which stories to tell in the panels. But I would imagine, he conceptualized each of those panels, probably sketched them out, and maybe even sketched them onto the ceiling itself.
Well, going back to like, who determined, like there must've been a lot of politics back then. And so then that makes me think of like cave paintings like that you would find archaeologically, like at the start of man, so you can see these cavemen having like meetings about, okay, which cave painting should we start with?
Well,
I want to do the one about eating, starting fire.
Here's the one with me clubbing my wife. Yeah. Like, here's why I think it's relevant.
Wow, sounds like Monty Python shit.
She pissed me off really bad the other night. So I don't know if I've told you this theory that I have, that memes are our generation's hieroglyphs.
You've told me this, yes.
And that sounds like a joke, but it's not.
No,
I'm entirely legit. Because they synthesize exactly what we're going through in our culture right now, whether it's politically or the Kardashians or anything. They synthesize it into one image with very short text. Not only that, they're hilarious oftentimes. So there's
sort of like political cartoons. They've taken the place of political cartoons.
Completely. But they're even better than, like, there's a vetting process. The internet is its own vetting process. So a political cartoon, the editor approves or disapproves. And lots of times you read those and they're so stupid. You don't even, like, smile. Yeah. Whereas memes, they only go viral if they've gotten thumbs up from everybody on the internet.
And they're so good because they're anonymous. There's no commerce behind it. So you can be pretty... You know,
so that's the other crazy detail.
Aggressive.
Like, we can't name a single cave drawing artist. We can name famous artists from the 1300s or, you know, earlier, but there's no cave artist that we can name.
Renaissance, you can't think of anybody.
Not really. So then you got these, to bring back to the meme analogy, these guys living in their mom's basements, just putting...
How do you know they live in my mom's basement? Sure.
So they're generating genius level content. I mean, to be able to tap into everybody and have it go viral is pretty amazing. And now people are arguing with me on the internet or in their car right now going, I know, you know, a meme account, the Fat Jewish, that's a famous memer. No. He's regurgitating memes. He's not generating memes.
Right.
So you can't name any of the actual meme artists,
yeah.
You know, but they are prolific in their work. They're generating
tons. Does a meme artist lose credibility if he tries to put his little mark on it?
I think so.
Kind of go, nah, sorry, pal.
I think
you're trying to capitalize here or you're out.
The anonymity is part of the agreement. And like you said, there's no commerce. So they're doing it completely for free, hence living in the mom's basement.
Right.
And they're not
signing their name to it.
But they're almost poets in a sense because they're
kind of like rap artists in a way because they're a lot of times they're taking photos that they didn't take and they're mixing mediums or taking maybe a famous quote and or like a lot of times you'll see like a photo from a classic movie where there's mm-hmm. a classic character like a Caddyshack guy or something.
You're so right. Anyway, it is a collage.
Yeah, and much like rap where they were like, you know, lifting sampling riffs and beats. Sampling beats and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. They're yeah, I don't know. Anyways.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, spit. We got lots to catch up on. By the way, you did say we're here at Shack and you mentioned Dick Metz, but Serving Heritage and Culture Center.
Yes.
Thank you for hosting us.
Absolutely.
And this is the effort of Dick Metz, who Scott's going to try to poach for an interview, even though I've already got one in the can waiting to go out.
He's got tons of stories. Tons of content there.
And actually, I would love.
All you got to do is just like, you can just bring up one guy, just one name, and you can have 2 hours of conversation. Because you just diverge and go
by conversation.
I just had that should have been recorded. What I was just talking to Dick about just now.
By the way, by conversation, doesn't it require a back and forth?
What are you saying?
All you got to do is tee Dick up with a name, yeah. And then he goes for 2 hours.
Exactly.
It's a monologue, like
Pat
is what
Rossi
it is.
Style.
Yeah,
it's a soliloquy.
We do owe Neat Essentials a thank you as well for being a long term supporter of this show.
And my friend, I was surfing with my friend Sam the other day. He paddled out. We were just rapping. He goes, yeah, the water got chilly. I got this new Neat Essentials. I was like, killer, man. He's like, yeah, I've been, you know, because he obviously listens to the show.
Cool.
And he got his brand new Neat Essentials 3.2. He's psyching. He's stoked.
It's funny. As long as we've been talking about it, I just kind of presume everybody's hip to the Neat Essentials now. And they get, you know, 4 different suits throughout the year for whatever water temp it is. But I got a text or a DM from a listener the other day saying, what are your thoughts on Neat Essentials? I'm like, you don't already know my thoughts. Okay, here it is in paragraph form. He's like, sweet, I've been wanting to try it because this weather wetsuit failed me, you know, or whatever. So I was like, wow, it's funny. After
speaking
all these
of which,
years,
we both got an email from a guy today or yesterday about the Maurice Cole Reverse V Groveler that you have, right?
Oh,
that
I didn't read it.
So we got an email from a guy named Aaron. And he's like, hey, I'm thinking about buying a Reverse V Groveler. I think he's here in San Clemente, actually. And what do you think, you know? And I was like, well, first of all, I don't think mine's a groveler. Mine's just a performance tri-fin. I don't think it's the groveler. It's 6'4", my board.
Oh, yeah.
It's 6'4", and it's just got a normal outline. It's not like a wider hip to tail or anything.
Yeah.
But it is a reverse V, and I love it. It's my go-to board for solid beach break sessions, you know, when I need to make it out of the tube.
It does
huge gaffing hacks, really.
Mine is in my car right now.
Perfect. So I'm a fan. I told Aaron
me
I'm
too.
A fan.
Yeah.
I also said, surfboards are subjective. What David and I like, you might not like. What David likes, Scott might not like. What Scott likes, David might. And, you know, it is what it is. That's the beauty of surfboards. Yeah. Every guy's different and every board's a little different for that person. And
did he say he was getting one?
He's got limited budget. He's thinking about getting one. I said, dude, pull the trigger.
Yep. I would agree. That's a good choice. We got a couple of things we need to catch up on before we get into the Gabriel controversy in Portugal and everything else. I wanted to touch base on Whidbey Island with you.
Oh, okay.
I was up there at this exact moment last week. That's where I was.
And you interviewed Matt.
I did an episode with Matt Warshaw and then one with Drew Campion.
Oh, so good. How great is Drew?
Crazy. He's great.
He's awesome.
Great. Yeah, he's really
great. He is so smart and just... I know Matt was probably really, really good, but I'm guessing that Drew was better.
I wouldn't say better. They're totally different. I mean, they couldn't be more dissimilar almost.
Drew's just witty and smart, and he's just a thought ahead. I mean, so's Matt.
You're 100% right. And Drew will just like open his mouth and kind of freeform poetry as he's organizing his thoughts. They're all kind of coming out real kind of, I don't even know. It's like jazz kind of. Warshaw's an editor. Right. Like Warshaw, nothing comes out of his mouth without running through three filters of editing first, you know?
Exactly.
Except I got him a little bit drunk.
Well played, David. Well played.
So the second hour of the interview is a little looser than the first.
Oh, this is great.
And then he even insisted, dude, you got to edit that. That should just be 1 hour. Like cut it down into an hour. I'm like, heck no.
You don't know podcasting, Matt Warshaw.
He doesn't. He totally doesn't. So that is good for its own.
I told you my mom lives on Whidbey.
Which I wanted to ask you more about.
Yeah, she lives on Whidbey.
How did she end up there?
She and her husband moved up there like 30 years ago, you know, just like get out of Southern California. It's over. She's the classic case of it's over in Southern California. The I-5 is now busy. I'm out.
Wow. If it was busy, if she thought it was busy 30 years ago, imagine what she would think now.
Actually, she's driving down here this weekend.
Well, so there must have been something in the water 30 years ago because that's when Campion moved.
Exactly.
Like there was a movement.
Yeah.
Some places become hip for like a short period of time. Joshua Tree was hip.
I think Whidbey was like that.
It's weird because I had never really even heard of it before. And then as soon as I said I was going, everybody that I know is like, oh yeah, I've been there. I vacationed there. I did this. Yeah.
Well, as you know, there's a naval station there. So there's a lot of people that know about it because there's a lot of Navy people that are rolling, you know, running through the mill there to 4 years and on to some other spot.
Have you spent time on it?
Yeah.
It's freaking beautiful.
Oh, was it nice and sunny for you?
Yeah. It was. I went the perfect day, basically.
Yeah, October's perfect.
October, but it wasn't raining. All the fall colors were changing, and it was sunny.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the Chamber of Commerce week where they're like, hey, you might want to buy a house here because it rains 90% of the time. It's gray and overcast.
Totally. But the whole arts district community thing, I was not aware of
prior to going. Which part of the town?
Langley,
yeah, that's where Drew lives, and I think my mom lived in Langley. They moved to another part of the island. But
well, I just had unbelievable lunch. Like I showed up early, I was waiting for Drew to finish up an appointment, and like just had a lunch. But it was on the second floor of the restaurant, so like overlooking the water, and every angle you look at, it's gorgeous, and everybody there is quaint and happy, and just like this hometown kind of. Yeah. You know, Norman Rockwell kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. I loved it. Too slow pace for me. I would not live there, but I absolutely loved it. And Drew, by the way, I had never met Drew before. He was super gracious and warm, as if we've known each other forever, and very open, wanting to discuss whatever, but not a lot of ego or pride. Like he wasn't trying to show off or prove his worth.
He has a ton of humility. He's very spiritually evolved, I would say.
Interesting.
And you know what's really cool about Drew is he put his kids through this. I'm going to butcher it. I'll come to it later if I remember because I'm going to have a blank.
Through a certain type of schooling?
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know.
It's based on this one guy, Rudolf Steiner.
Oh,
that's
what
it is. Rudolf Steiner.
It's the father of biodynamics.
So there's a full school that you can put your kids through. I forget what it's called, but you could Google it. But it's based on Rudolf Steiner's theories.
Okay. And his kids did their entire schooling that way or just?
Yes.
Interesting.
At least that's what last time I talked to Drew, I think that's what we were discussing.
That's fascinating.
But what's really interesting to tie this back into surfing is the movie Rainbow Bridge was made by this guy named Chuck Wein, right?
Right.
Chuck Wein was a huge follower of Rudolf Steiner. And a lot of the themes in that movie that were supposed to come out that sometimes didn't come out because it wasn't the greatest made film of all times, a lot of the themes, a lot of the spirituality, a lot of the, like I say, the themes, tropes in that movie are Steiner-esque, Rudy Steiner-esque. And in fact, Rudy Steiner's, there's voiceover of Rudy Steiner in Rainbow Bridge. Like there's parts of it where you hear this, like they're freak, they're like having an LSD trip. And in the background, you hear this old German guy going, you know, or whatever he's saying. And that's Rudy Steiner.
It's the Waldorf education.
Exactly.
I've heard of Waldorf. I never knew that was Rudolf Steiner.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I did meet Drew's daughter. She was there too. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. It was a really, really good experience for me. By the way, if you did the Mount Rushmore of surf riders.
Oh, Campion's on there.
He has to be.
Who else? Mount Rushmore of surf riders. It's Campion.
Would Warshaw?
I would. The one that I would want to put on there is pretty contemporary.
Who?
Doherty. Sean Doherty.
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, I think he's a legit author. Like he's a legit writer, not just a surf journalist. Like he can write anything.
Oh yeah, he's written a ton of books.
Yeah, that's my point. So so it would be, let's just say Doherty, Campion, but there's so many in between there that we're missing.
Well, somebody like Finnegan.
I would say Nick Carroll, maybe.
Yeah. Finnegan like has a Pulitzer, but he doesn't really write that much, you know?
Yeah, you would have to sort of put the category into context. Like what is...
Authors versus... Like a book authors sort of versus...
Journalism. Yeah, or, like... You know, like...
Yeah.
Because you might put Derek Hind on there. He wrote all those really great sort of...
You know.
Almost...
Power rankings?
Yeah. With some vitriol. Little like spice. A little bit spicy, you know.
I know, but...
Which made you...
If you only pick four.
Yeah, I know.
I'd go Warshaw has to be.
Maybe. Maybe Warshaw. Warshaw, Campion, Sean Doherty, and Nick Carroll? Or is Nick Carroll... Is Nick Carroll not...
Nick's in the conversation for sure.
Yeah, he's in the conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's, yeah, that's tough.
I mean, you could throw... Maybe Barlotti in there or Steve Hawk or really nobody at Surfing Magazine.
I mean,
Nick Carroll's from Surfing.
But Pesman has like an important role in surf writing, but I don't know that he's penned as many articles as others. But like he was editor.
Pesman's more like Bing Copeland. Like he oversaw the empire, but he never really crafted the story.
Right. Yeah, well, Campion would be in the pole position.
I would agree. There's no doubt that Campion would be one of them.
Yeah. Well, okay, so Whidbey Island's covered. One other follow-up. I'm going to let you try to guess which story this is in reference to from our last show. This is an email from a listener.
I think I did this too.
Who felt the need to chime in on a topic that we had in our last show. You ring the button... Ring the bell when you can identify which story he is referring to.
Okay.
All right? Paddling out all alone at Osage.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
Shitting in your wetsuit.
Wow. In record time.
You get a story about Griffin Colapinto shitting in his wetsuit?
Yep, that is it. You nailed it, Scott. You win the Brown Trophy.
Oh, my God. The Brown Trout Award?
The Brown. Yeah, exactly. Here is the trophy, the wall hanger of the Brown
Trophy.
Okay,
well, let's hear this. All right, by the way, I had no idea.
You nailed it.
I did.
You nailed it. Paddling out all alone at Osage Boulevard about 10 years ago, fall, early fall morning, crisp offshores. A friend had just gotten back from Costa Rica where he lived for a year, and he mentioned that every once in a while he would just drop a load on the paddle out in his trunks, and anytime he would duck dive, it would automatically flush. I thought this sounded totally disgusting, but it also sounded liberating.
Oh my God.
So I felt
this sounds like a Penthouse forum letter.
Depending on what you're into, Scott, geez. You reveal a little too much, dude.
Oh, yeah. It just reads that way.
So know? I felt.
I never thought I would, you know.
I too felt the enormous I felt the enormous pressure in my stomach as I entered the water and decided I would give it a go. Things went off completely smooth. There was nobody around and I started paddling out as my turd floated into the white water. Then suddenly I turn around and there's Donald Takeyama paddling out right behind me.
Nice.
We surfed alone for 2 hours trading waves. I felt horrible. That was the end of it. So I messaged him back. I was like, dude, did Donald know? Like, you really kind of didn't give me the punchline of this story. And he's like, honestly, I have no idea. I kind of paddled away and like tried to surf a peak by myself because I just was like so embarrassed.
Oh my God.
But how good is that? You think you're alone. You do something that is very private, very intimate, and you turn around and one of your icons is paddling out right behind you.
Puts a whole new meaning to Takeyama's teriyaki sauce.
Oh. Did he have his own teriyaki
sauce?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where is it available?
It was available at like El Pescador Fish Market and other
man,
you know, Seaside Market and little Trader Joe's.
San Diego gem that I was unaware of.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good story.
Yeah. How do you like that? Did you say you have one as well that you're going to read?
Oh, I have an email. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It says, hey, guys, during the past episode, Scales. By the way, I've noticed people call you Scales. What do you think?
I'll take it.
Okay. During the past episode, Scales brought up the idea of reducing the frequency of your episodes. Just my two cents as a listener for many years, don't do it. We need minimum one show per month. You and I do two shows a month, usually.
No, but what I was suggesting was there are shows that do seasons so that like you could take a break,
right?
You know, every 6 months.
Both you guys are doing a phenomenal job. The content is always interesting, so keep up the great work. P.S. I need to run by the old inland at Austin soon and see if I can observe any progress on the wave park. D.C. from Texas.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in. I'm committed to two a month. Let's do it. What do we do, man? Do we get straight into it?
Yeah, we just got to go straight into Cayo and Medina.
You want to give the breakdown?
No, why don't you? You're pretty good at setting it up.
So, where do we begin? Cayo Belly.
Well, it's Gabriel like Medina. Round three or four.
First of all, let's back up.
Okay.
I so don't care about this event at this point.
Me either.
If this detail hadn't happened,
totally,
I almost wouldn't even watch the event.
Remind me about what you just said because I need to tie that into something I'm going to say later.
Okay.
Yeah.
The WSL has lost my interest and it's really due to the waves. Like the waves aren't good. And so when I have watched heats first, and then it runs in the middle of the night for us in Southern California. So I don't get to watch it live. I wake up in the morning and I'll try to watch some of the heats and it's so boring because the girls are battling to get fours in close out windy, crappy beach break. So I know the WSL is now screaming at me going, well, that's why we designed this wave pool where we could predict. And when we do that, you also shame us for that. What do you want, Scales? And I'm saying...
Scales?
And I'm saying, fewer surfers on tour, target the windows. Like,
you're telling what I've been saying forever.
Yes. No, this is now our... Tour. Now I'm you're appropriating
right. Okay.
Your ideas.
Purple blob tour.
Yeah, like we've designed the way... To ensure that you can run in good waves, basically.
And to ensure that you and I watch.
Yeah, because I'm not watching right now. No. I'm bored out of my mind. Anyway, no. We will come back to that.
Okay.
Gabriel Medina, Cayo Belly end up in the middle of the event, you know, a meaningless or, you know, a middle.
It was round
middle
four, round three.
Round three, round four. They don't even name them. They're not even those names anymore. You know, the seeding round of 16 or whatever it is.
It's completely confusing.
Totally confusing. And Gabriel was absolutely dominating the heat. He had... sixes and sevens. Cayo had fours, basically.
Less, I think.
Yeah, less. He ended up getting a couple of fours. But there was 8 minutes left. Cayo had priority. Gabriel absolutely battles Cayo for the wave. Even when the wave's approaching and they're paddling out towards it, Gabriel's cutting off Cayo kind of into his lane. Then Cayo spins to go back at the wave. Gabriel does a delayed spin so that he's blocking Cayo again. Then Cayo... it does have priority position on the right, plus deemed priority from the judges. Gabriel's bumping rails, bumping shoulders with him. Cayo gets to his feet and just throws his arms up automatically like, what the heck? Gabriel almost gets sucked over the falls on the piddly little wave and then like looks at the judges and also says, what the heck? So Cayo, just to recap, had priority from the judges. The disc said that it was Cayo's priority. So Cayo went. Gabriel, in his mind, thought that he had priority because he felt that he had entered the lineup first after their last. They both took off on a wave previously. Gabriel kicked out first, started paddling out first, felt that he had made it to the lineup first, so just assumed that he had priority, but never checked the disc. Apparently, the judges, the priority judge, even called out on the loudspeaker that Kayo had priority. So Gabe failed by not checking the disc and by not listening to what was being called out over the loudspeakers and just presumed that he had priority. So that's why he battled Kayo. Ultimately, the judges deemed it an interference against Gabriel Medina, so he lost an entire wave. Kayo was still left needing a score at that point. He eventually got a wave, got the score, won the heat. This is particularly important because Gabriel is in pole position for the world title, and every heat matters at this point. In all likeliness, he'll still be in pole position going into pipe, but he could have clinched the world title in Portugal. He will not do that any longer because of this interference call.
Thank God. Thank God it's going to pipe. Sounds like a WSL conspiracy theory to me. Here's one viewpoint that I read that I think sums it up really, really well. Yes, Gabe Medina should have had priority.
So, real quickly, everything went online and Gabe stated on his Instagram, I should have had priority. I wasn't just battling Kayo. Like, the judges, the priority judges made a mistake. I was in the lineup first. I should have had priority. They need to fix this situation, basically.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll even preface that by saying there's a really great Instagram feed that Gabe put up that has both camera angles of the right and the left that Kayo and Gabe catch prior to the interference. They both go. I think Gabe surfs for like 5 seconds. Kayo surfs for like 12 or 15 seconds. So he's further down the beach. Gabe at this point is already kicked out and is paddling back out. Kayo's now paddling back out. And they're probably 150 yards away from each other or more. Very far away. And it appears to me that Gabe was outside before Kayo was outside. If we just did straight line parallel to the beach. Regardless, that doesn't matter what appears to have occurred, right? What matters is that, and I'll read again, I'm going to read this viewpoint from, this is verbatim from a reader on Stab, which I think totally nailed it. Medina should have had priority, and the judges definitely messed up on that. But at the end of the day, it's the athlete's responsibility to confirm that they have priority or not. I am sure this is not the first time the WSL has messed up priority, nor will it be the last. But Medina is at fault for not confirming that he had priority like he assumed. There should not be a resurf, as Medina should have made sure he had priority. In the past, yes, athletes might be mad they didn't get priority, but they didn't get an interference because they were careful enough to look at the tower to check priority. Something that Gabby failed to do. And somebody else chimes in, which I think is kind of important. And he's speaking to the rule, the actual rule, the WSL rule. The rule clearly states that it is based on the priority judge's belief. Capital belief. So basically, the rule says that in arbitrary situations, subjective situations, the priority judge's decision is the rule of law. In other words, there shouldn't be a resurf. The subjective decision was made.
You're now beholden to that.
This is the belief. Yeah, you are beholden now to this. And oh, by the way, we also flipped it for Kayo and we set it over the loudspeaker. We flipped the marker. So there's no reason for a resurf. And Medina, yeah, maybe be a little bit pissed off. I think you could call it either way. Was it Kayo's? Was it, you know, I can see both sides of the equation. 6 and 1, half dozen another. At the end of the day, Medina failed his responsibility as a competitor.
Yep.
No resurf. Do you think there's going to be a resurf?
Well, WSL took to Instagram this morning, and they addressed it for the first time since the controversy.
Yeah.
And they said, quote, no resurf.
Good.
And further, Kayo was in the lineup first,
good,
further down the beach, and good, was rightfully rewarded priority.
I love it.
We can clearly hear the beach announcer say, priority is with blue.
Perfect.
So the WSL which went silent basically for 2 days, a day and a half, which I was going to chastise them for. And even the couple of heats afterwards, the commentators weren't discussing it anymore. Like,
okay, let me chime in if I may, because this is what I'm talking about. Yeah. This is, as you mentioned, this is has world title implications, right? This is a big effing deal.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, by far the most exciting and news-making moment of the year. Gabe's on a roll. He's throwing aerials. He's scoring big time. This is, we're about to make the world champion. I think Gabe, all he had to do was make the finals.
Kaio's not even on tour. Kaio, the underdog. He's upset Slater in, right. I think it was Margaret River. He's upset people all across by getting these wild card entries into events, and here he is again.
And but what I'm trying to build the fact that we're about to announce the world champion. Yeah. We're about to make the world champion Gabe Medina. I mean, he's on a roll. He's absolutely killing it. So this is by far the most exciting and news-making moment of the year, for sure, in this event, right? So why doesn't the WSL have the camera on Gabe Medina the entire time when he's storming up the beach, when he's marching up to the judges' tower, when he's having a flip out? I guarantee you that this is perhaps the largest directorial faux pas in the history of the WSL. That they don't continue to cover this, why they cut and go to commercial at this moment is the silliest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I was just pulling my hair out.
Yeah.
You've got to just have every microphone, every camera on him. I will point to golf and or tennis as great examples of this. When there's a situation in golf where, you know, a guy maybe hit the ball without meaning to hit it, or there's a rule thing that needs to go down and a golfer is irate, NBC TV has got a camera right in front of the guy and a microphone picking up every F-bomb, and there's a rules official right there, and the whole drama of the entire broadcast is crescendoing right at this crucial moment. And this is just a major, major flub-up by the WSL and the director, the guy who produces and directs this show. That's what this is. This is a show. This is entertainment.
Totally.
And they completely failed, and I'm not going to give them a pass on this. They have got to get cameras and microphones on these high tension situations. Yeah. They've got to be there.
Completely.
And then this dovetails into your great commentary that you're about to give about the lack of discussion about this.
Yep. So they've made one step in the right direction based on something we've criticized them about for a long time, which is at least they're addressing it after the fact. Like, they've done a thorough job today on the WSL surf breaks thing that they do every day. They devoted the entire, you know, minute and a half to showing the time coding, showing the footage, showing Gabriel walk up to the judges' tower, all of that stuff.
Good.
And they're right in their call. Like, they made the right decision on the spot, and they're now verifying that to us. But they took a day and a half to do it, and they didn't do what you're saying. The couple of heats right afterwards, I think everybody was unsure if a mistake had been made. And so while Gabriel was in the judges' booth, you know, addressing the issue with them, they went radio silent until it got sorted out. But it took a day and a half to sort out, which is silly. Like, they should have been willing to follow the sword.
Because what I get is I get the director in the ear of those broadcasters going, you guys, don't talk about this. Just this is the company line. Just say this. Don't say anything until we get it figured out.
Yeah.
Which is just the worst thing you can do. Like, we want to be in the middle of it. We want to see the controversy unfold. We want to know that you guys aren't really sure about it just yet and that we're going through the process of trying to figure it out. And yeah, maybe it's this. Maybe it's this, you know, we're going to know more. More will be revealed, but we are talking to you about it. And, you know, like, radio silence is BS, man.
When you're in the business of radio, you can't go radio silent.
No doubt.
You know? So, yeah, I completely... So, bravo to the WSL and shame on the WSL simultaneously for... But...
Well, their conviction this morning is great. I love that there's just a ton of conviction there. Yeah, but we've stated our case. You've got to roll film for us. That's the only thing... That's the only reason to watch this entire day of surfing was that moment, and they cut to commercial.
So, a couple of additional questions for you about this.
Yeah.
If the priority judge had made a mistake, which we thought that they had for the first day or two.
The priority judge doesn't make mistakes. He makes a subjective decision, and then that is the rule of law according to the WSL rule. But so I don't like the term mistake.
Well, his subjective decision is based on what's supposed to be objective. So if it becomes subjective, it is a failure on his part. It's supposed to be an objective ruling of who gets out to the lineup first.
And he got it right, right? There wasn't a
correct,
mistake. Right.
Correct. And by the way, I'm going to read further real quickly.
So what you were saying is...
I'll come back to that. When the WSL cuts to the time-coded footage, which shows Medina and Abelli paddling out simultaneously after their rides, Abelli clearly gets past the impact zone before Medina and even sits down on his board for a moment before deciding to head north towards the peak where Medina was settled.
Which is what you would do as a competitor. You're going to go sit next to the competitor. So, yeah.
So he
got out
so
there, took a breath, scraped his wax with his fingers, and then paddled up to
the peak. But Gabe's thought is he didn't make it to the point where I was sitting.
Right.
I made it to this peak first. Medina didn't factor in that, well, get down the beach, Kyle made it past the impact zone, sat on his board, then decided to go surf elsewhere.
Right.
That's where the discrepancy was for...
But Gabe. Hypothetically...
But okay, so back to my hypothetical.
Yeah.
If the priority judge had made a mistake, or what I'm going to call a mistake, does the WSL, like, what would their best course of action had been, would be? Did they...
A resurf?
Really? You think so?
Yeah.
So if they made the mistake...
If there's a mistake and they're saying it's a mistake, they come out with a press release that says, we made a mistake.
You think they do a resurf?
You have to do a resurf.
You think?
Yeah.
If you're going to say
that we screwed up...
It makes it so much sloppier and uglier to do the resurf.
But if you're going to say that, there has to be recourse for the one that was offended, which would have been Gabe in this case.
I remember we did that years ago with Taj and Bede and West Oz.
Yeah.
Like Bede won on some... technicality that was called into question. So then they're like, all right, we'll do a resurf tomorrow morning, and then Bede won again in like the proper heat, you know, which was great. And
you can't say you made a mistake and not run a resurf,
because mistakes happen all the time in the NBA. Referees get calls wrong all the time.
Yeah, but you don't have the ability to have a, you know, to like that's go back the next day and have a.
But I don't think just we not. Do either. It like everything changes that next day, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see your point, like the conditions are different or whatever.
Like in the 24 hours that they were considering, or there was rumored to be a resurf coming, I was like, I don't know. Like, I think you just got to deal the hand that you're dealt, or you got to play the hand that you're dealt.
Resurfs have happened. The precedent has been set, too. So it's not like it's out of the realm for all the competitors to go, what? We've never even heard of a resurf. Like, that's kind of like, they were all going, maybe there'll be a resurf. You know, like it's... It's in their consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's real tough. This falls into the category of like the WSL trying to be a sport, trying to make this a sport when there's too much. There's all these gray areas that exist that really prevent it. It's a square peg in a round hole, right?
I've told you, if you can wear dress pants, smoke a cigarette, and or you're not scoring your own points, it's not a sport.
Okay, well, nobody's smoking a cigarette in the lineup, so that qualifies it as a sport.
Right.
The word wetsuit has the word suit built right into it, which is synonymous with dress pants.
The fact of the matter is, oh, and by the way, you have to have a defender. There needs to be a defender, and you have to score your own points. You can't go out there and hope to let somebody else's points be attributed to you.
So golf isn't a sport?
No, it's an athletic endeavor.
Okay.
These are all athletic endeavors. Athletic endeavor, no defense.
Okay.
There's no defender. Got to have a defender.
Okay. Baseball.
Baseball has defenders, but they can smoke cigarettes.
They're not really defenders. I guess there is.
They're defending the bases.
Word is defense. Yeah,
they're defending the bases. I don't think they smoke cigarettes. I mean, they could, but that was like in 1910 when
it'd be epic. The Pope was
smoking cigarettes.
It's probably illegal to smoke in a stadium nowadays, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah.
But those are good parameters for what qualifies as a sport, as opposed to an athletic endeavor.
Yeah.
Not to suggest that, you know, climbing, you know, Half Dome isn't incredibly difficult, but it's not a sport.
Right.
It's an athletic endeavor.
After 4 or 5 years, I'm slowly coming around to your idea on
this. Yes.
I'm not giving up yet. Yes. I just want to be contrarian. So I'll find an example. Let me think.
Bowling. You can smoke a cigarette, wear dress pants, and there's no defender. The only thing you do is you score your own points.
But that's not very athletic either.
And it's not, you know, it's not even an athletic endeavor.
That's just a hobby. It's just an endeavor.
It's just an endeavor. It's just a hobby. You guys out there, you got to Google YouTube. There's this, the greatest moment in professional bowling history. I think I've told you about this, where the one guy, he's the son of the world famous, like legendary bowler, the most legendary bowler of all time, right? And this guy's the son, and he's followed in his father's footsteps. And now he's about 40 years old, and he's had a history of like alcoholism and probably some cocaine abuse and just all sorts of shit that went down in the late 70s and the 80s. And he's on his comeback trail, and he bowls like a perfect game or something, and he's got the most insane celebration in the history of celebrations, where he just goes, "Oh, you got to YouTube it and watch it."
How can I even find it?
Just go on YouTube and Google Professional Bowlers Association. Google like PBA.
Are you sure you weren't just watching Kingpin?
No.
You're talking about Bill Murray right now?
No, this is the greatest. It's a known celebration. It's the greatest celebration. And he looks right at the fans, who all hate him, and he just goes, and he just like screams at him, and it's just like, it's so over the top. It's the greatest
perfect
thing
ever. I'll make a meme out of
it. I'm going to try to find it.
No. I'll make a meme out of it and send it, or Instagram it out.
Yeah, you got
to try to find it now. Okay. It's going to slow down the
pacing
of the show.
Oh, the show's so great.
It is okay. Okay, so one other question to you about this situation.
Yeah.
Gabe, it's not even a question. Here's my statement.
Okay.
Gabriel is a dick. Like, Gabriel's such a dick.
No shit.
Like, none of this would have happened if you weren't such an a-hole. Like, whether you have priority or not, look at what Gabriel was doing. And it's like, okay, so that actually makes me call into question Gabriel's authenticity. Because if Gabe had if he thought that he had priority in his head, why did he attack Kyle the way that he was attacking Kyle? If he had priority, he would have just spun and gone with impunity without even thinking about Kyle.
Yeah, hoping that Kyle was going to go.
Hoping that Kyle would bang into him.
Right.
Not the opposite.
Right.
The fact that Gabe actually pressed Kyle and blocked him two or three times in the paddling makes me think that Gabriel knew that Kyle had priority the entire time. F Gabriel. Gabriel's a dick, and he deserves all of the retribution and hatred that Kyle is getting online. Deserves to be devoted at Gabriel.
Totally agree. We've got a black hat that's gotten blacker. He's the guy we love to hate. He is the dark, mean, evil surfer. Gabe Medina.
Evil. He's
evil.
Pure evil.
Evil.
Wrapped up into one swaddling yellow jersey.
That's exactly right. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a great thing to have somebody that in a competitive
except
format.
Own it.
That
we, own it.
That, like, we get to hate.
Own it. Come out and be like, yeah, I blocked him because F Kyle. He's not even on tour. He's not even good enough to be on tour. That's why I blocked him, because F that guy. That's what he should be saying. He shouldn't be crying. He shouldn't be crying to the judges with his daddy on the beach screaming and crying.
Yeah.
Going, oh, there's been a miss. What this indicates.
I heard daddy blew up.
Yeah.
Blew a gasket.
Yeah, exactly.
We wanted to see that.
No, this is pathetic. Your dad is fighting your battles for you. This is pathetic. Further.
Soft.
Further, no, this shows a level of entitlement that we have not seen in a long time. This guy's completely lost touch with reality. He thinks that he's the world champ, which, by the way, is only possible because John is injured. He's never won a world title with John being a healthy competitor. So
Andy Irons would stomp on
Gabriel. Oh my gosh. He'd stomp on his throat. So Gabriel is so entitled that he thinks everybody needs to bow down, and the priority judges are failing at their job when they clearly did it correctly, and that everybody needs to get out of his way, and he's going to push you around even when he has priority. It's
coddled,
insane.
Entitled, swaddled, soft.
This guy's a dick.
Spit the dummy.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
It's an Aussie phrase. It means you're upset.
Do you want to explain what?
Okay. A dummy is like a pacifier, and when a baby spits the dummy out and starts crying, they go, oh, mate, spat the dummy.
Yeah. So I'm not a fan. I am not a fan. And
let me ask you this. Will Gabe win pipe and win the world title?
Unfortunately, yes.
Who can we root for to get in his way?
Jordy.
To win the world title? Who's in the running?
Idolo.
Idolo. I would love to see Idolo win the world title.
Yeah.
That would be sick. A fellow countryman scooping it from him.
Scooping it.
That's a term.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Scoop it.
Scoop.
Get your scoop on.
Get your scoop on. Go ahead, internet. Make a meme. Scoop this.
So this is where Ernie McElroy does his dance.
Oh, my.
No, so, I mean, honestly, the math is with Gabe, and Gabe's always makes the quarterfinals at Pipe, if not the finals.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
So, you know what's interesting? You weren't there. You were out of town. But Elo and the guys at the WSL brought us up for that media thing about 9 or 10 months ago, whatever it was. And a number, you might remember, I came back and I was raving about Elo was showing me this little trailer for this Brazilian storm documentary that they're putting out, basically saying it's not a Brazilian storm, it's like it's going to happen for, it's like a Brazilian weather pattern or something. Like, basically this documentary is the Brazilians getting up on their high horse, Gabe leading the way and going, we're here, we're not leaving, screw you, it's on, but like really kind of like puffing up their chest. And it was supposed to be released soon. Like, Elo was telling me they wanted to release it prior to Hawaii to kind of get the whole energy flowing about this Pipe event and you know, crowning a world champion in December and that whole thing. This is going to help kind of light the fire, so to speak. Now we've got some embers already. We've got, you know, the fire's half lit. Now all we got to do is get Elo to put this documentary out there. You and I talk about it at length. I'm going to shoot a text to Elo and find out when that thing's coming out and what it's called, and we need to be looking for that.
How do you feel about the WSL's content that he's been creating? Have you been watching any of it?
Not really, no. I haven't. It's not that it isn't good. It doesn't mean it's not good. For the first time ever, I watched one of the surf breaks. And I liked it. I retweeted it. It was on Twitter. Was it on Twitter? On Instagram. It was on Instagram.
I reposted it. Regram.
It was good.
Was it? Why was it good?
Because I think it had Peter King involved in it somehow. Or it was good because I forget why, but it had to do with Carissa. And I don't know why it was good, but I remember going, this is actually pretty good. I'm going to repost those.
I have never heard someone speak with such passion and ferocity before. I mean, sold. I'm going to go find that clip and watch it now. Look,
we're in the world of, you know, 30-second edits, and I don't know. I think I saw it. Yeah, you know, it was pretty good. I retweeted it, whatever. But anyway, my point is,
I think it had,
because I haven't seen it, because I haven't watched some of the stuff they're putting out, doesn't mean it's not good. The one thing I did watch, I really liked. I talked about it. The kid from Colombia, the kid that's like a challenge athlete, Freddie. Yeah, Freddie El Campeón.
Did you watch Kelly Slater's Sound Waves?
No, That thing seems too much like he has control over it.
Like Kelly does?
Yeah.
Well, if he does, and he approved what got.
Oh, really? What happened? I missed it. Now I want to watch it.
This was one of the better things I've seen in a while, from a delectable kind of psychological analysis, you know, thing that we love to do with Kelly.
Yeah.
He's nuts, dude.
Oh, my God. Was he arguing with a flat earther, or what's going down?
No, that would be even better. I wish we got to see that. No, I mean, like, look, he's...
he's nuts, says David Lee Scales. You just called him crazy.
He's great. You know, it's great that he's
great
so
content.
Ripe. Yeah, he's so ripe. He's such an intellect that he's a thinker, and so there's a lot going on.
He's the greatest
for us to kind of assess.
I love it.
But it was mainly centered around Surf Ranch and his coming to terms with having built this thing and engineered this thing and not being a top competitor at this thing that he built and spent his whole life, you know, focusing on.
And so he spent his whole life.
His entire life's work all wrapped up into one barrel of life. All right,
maybe.
And so him coming to terms with, like, being on site and he can't put together 2.7s, you know? And, like, his back is hurt and so he's, like, stretching out or he's coming off of whatever injuries or just nursing whatever small injuries that he's always had. And Kalani in his quarter, like, giving him little positive affirmations. And then the bizarre part comes with this guy, Charlie Goldsmith, who's a television healer, quote unquote. That is his, his, when you search him, I think even
God
his website is
Kelly Slater.
He has this Charlie Goldsmith, who's a television healer, in his corner, constantly doing the positive affirmation thing. And like, Kelly, you're good enough. I don't know why you're worried about getting a 12th. Like,
that doesn't sound very positive.
Yeah. Well, so this is exactly what was perplexing to me, is like the simplicity of all of the positive affirmation. It was like, yeah, this is what my fourth grade cousin would tell you. Like, this is how they would
affirm
you.
And I think
you.
That's okay. Like, I think that's okay. I think affirmation should be simple.
Well,
I think they're best when they're simple.
Okay. Fair enough. So, first of all, who is the Charlie guy? We've never seen him before.
Dude, I heard that you're... What is he? A TV what? A healer?
Healer.
You're like a podcast healer.
Am I?
The this scale is like a therapy school session of podcast oftentimes. Healing, yeah.
I like it. I'm fine with
so
that.
So anyway, who is this guy?
Well, so you go to his
Jimmy
website.
Jimmy Swaggart's grandson or something?
Here's straight off of his website.
Yeah.
This is what he wrote about himself.
I'm sure he's a great guy. By the way, I don't know him from Adam, and I'm kind of ripping him, and I don't mean to...
Quote from his own website.
Okay.
It wasn't until after his first hospital study completed in 2013 by doctors, a hospital in New York, that it became public. The study was designed to build a case for a double-blind study in the future. It was published in 2015. I read that verbatim, so there's a bunch of errors in it grammatically. Secondly, they're attributing his kind of verifiable status as a healer to doctors in a hospital in New York. They don't say which doctors, they don't say which hospital, and they say that whatever that study was designed to build a case for a double-blind study in the future. So it wasn't even that was the case that was published and peer-reviewed and all that sort of stuff. It was just this anonymous study that was done that proves that he's a healer.
You know what's interesting
about
that?
It's so
vague.
My entire point is that anything you look into about him, it's super vague. And they keep saying, like, well, he doesn't charge for his healing. But he does charge for the weekly cleanse program that you can get on to live his lifestyle,
Oh, it's like you can buy, like, gallons of beans and a...
it was like, who is this guy, Charlie, that is giving Kelly this very, like... kind of pedestrian advice. And then you look into him and you go, oh my gosh, this has all the earmarks of just being a charlatan or somebody who's there to sell like their, you know, lifestyle product. It doesn't take a very deep dive to like have significant questions about Charlie. So then it calls into question, why does Kelly have this guy in his corner? Does Kelly, like, what does Kelly feel about this guy? Anyways, it's well worth watching, Scott. Soundwaves.
Well, I listened to this podcast the other day, which was I found really fascinating. I'm trying to pull it up, but it's basically a renowned psychiatrist, an MD, who's doing neuropsychology experiments, neuropsychological experiments, putting people's brains underneath, you know, scans and looking at the neurons in the and the brain chemistry and how it reacts to certain things and getting basically hard science, right? Hard science, data and data. And he's also on the other side of the equation, he's been meditating for like 24 years and he's the professor of the mindfulness program at Brown University, Ivy League School Brown.
Yep.
So he—
Your favorite color trout.
He does both. Right. So he's hard science data guy, but he's also been meditating for his own personal thing and then developed into this program at Brown. So for the first time ever, he's taken both of those sciences and basically confirmed what we all knew, that meditation is really good for you. But he's confirmed it through hard science and data through analyzing brainwaves and brain chemistry. It's pretty fascinating.
Mm. Yeah. Very good.
So what, maybe Kelly, you know,
what podcast it was on?
Yeah, it's this. I'm trying to find it. I can search it out. Okay. The guy's kind of he's got a pretty good following podcast.
Is it Sam Harris?
No. I didn't really necessarily think the host was all that great, which is often the case with these podcasts. But the guest was great.
Are you having your own Kelly Slater-esque existential crises right now?
No.
This thing that I built, I'm not sure I can get sixes on it anymore.
I'm definitely not getting sixes. I barely qualify for a resurf on this podcast.
Oh, God. Honestly, like for me, the entertainment in that thing was watching Kelly struggle with an existential crisis, you know, trying to be at the top of his game. When he's like very clearly, by all of our standards, not at the top of his game anymore when it comes to athletically winning events, you know, based on surfing prowess. He's just not the top guy anymore. And he still thinks that he is. And he has these yes people around him going, you're good enough. It's okay. We validate you, you know. And he's like, no, the only thing that validates me is going out there and winning. And he knows, we all know he can't do that.
I disagree.
Unless it's pipe.
Yeah.
He's not going to win it stops on tour.
Maybe not. He can win a pipe. He can win a Chopu.
Yep.
Where it matters.
Yeah. Except it doesn't matter for the world title.
Right.
You need to win at all those other spots too.
Right.
Or at least not lose to Leonardo Fioravanti in the
middle
of the event.
Oh my God. That's a good way to leave.
Is that unnecessary?
No, that's okay. I've got a quote for you. I can't really put into words what it's like to see these perfect waves rolling down the fields at last. What am I speaking of?
Surf ranch when somebody falls.
No. Nick Honesfield, the founder of The Wave, the first Wave Garden Cove open to the public in Bristol, in England, in the UK, Bristol's wave pool. So they've rolled the first couple waves down the test run there, and they're excited about it. So Nick, who's a big-time listener of the show, so I wanted to give him a shout-out.
Have you noticed with his emails, he'll say like, oh, I can't wait till you guys make it out here. I want that line to be like, I'm going to be flying you guys out here.
So that you can give a positive review.
Yeah, exactly. We're waiting. We received your invitation,
by the way,
Nick, and we appreciate it.
I'm going to be going to surf in some remote islands in Indonesia archipelago in next May into June.
Oh, okay.
This could be a thing that you and I could do together.
I know. We've talked about this before. Were you talking about including listeners on it too?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
But there's an opportunity for that. For sure. But even if it's just you and I just go on a surf trip.
I'd be open to that too.
Yeah.
I'm in a phase in my life where I need to be building for the future and not going on
this is
superfluous.
Well, here's the deal. You're going to be in Japan, right, for the Boardroom Show.
Is that an official invite, Scott?
Well, I'm just assuming based on your other work.
I would love to.
You were there last time, weren't you?
No.
Oh.
Wow, thanks.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you made a big impression. But
no, okay. I was not in Japan with you on a seminal moment not with in your
me.
Life.
Not with me, jeez, with your man. Other company.
Jeez.
So my point is that I'm going to be in Japan.
Okay, so it's a hop, skip,
so I'm just
jump.
Yeah, it's not like a major.
Okay.
While I'm there, I might as well go surf Indo. So.
Yeah, you might as well.
But anyway, it's the Monkey Surf Resort.
Okay.
Monkey Surf Resort in the Telus Islands. I'm going to be traveling out there next year. And okay. So the opportunity is there for listeners if they want to join me. I don't know what that looks like as far as cost or anything like
Before
that.
Before we put that out to listeners, that should
I'm be... I'm definitely going.
Yeah, we should... I mean, that's something that you and I have discussed on air years ago, and then listeners have asked for it, like a group surf trip. And yeah. I've had companies reach out to me and actually say, you could do this and you should do this.
Yeah.
I just haven't... done the work to figure it all out, but
well, the guys at the Monkey Surf Resort want you know, they want us to
publicity.
Yeah,
they want publicity.
Yeah, exactly. It's a new surf resort.
Okay,
so I'm going.
Sweet.
And I'm going to be talking about it, and okay. You might as well go too, and we might as well have listeners go is all I'm thinking.
Okay,
it might be cool.
All right, that's yeah. Enough time to map it out for yeah. Sure.
Cool. I have some dukes because I've got to get going here.
Yeah, definitely.
My Dukes, Damien Hobgood, pro surfers.
We're not throwing that term around loosely anymore.
Let me ask you this.
You learned.
If you are a world champion, are you a pro surfer for the rest of your life if you've won a world title?
Yes.
Okay. I would agree with that. So Jen Smith is a pro surfer for the rest of her life because Jen Smith won the world championship. So pro surfers / free surfers, Damien Hobgood, Jen Smith, Devin Howard, Tim Curran, Taylor Knox, and Josh Kerr, all of them made time this weekend and volunteered to surf in the Surf Aid Cup San Diego. And we raised over $50,000 for Surf Aid programs in Baja and Indonesia. So those six pro surfers are my Duke Hanamokos for being a part of the Surf Aid Cup San Diego.
Duke status for sure. Congrats. Neither here nor there, doesn't fit into the structure of the show, but just a side thought. Do you follow Kalani Rob on Instagram?
No.
Any reason why?
No. Okay. No reason why.
He has not aged a day in 20 years. It's freaking crazy. Like, he's shredded. He's like rocking a six pack. I mean, he's got to be 40 at this point, right? 42, 43.
For sure, yeah.
He's shredded, looks exactly like he did when he was surfing Rocky Point all the time. Seems to be having more fun than even Mason Ho. Like, he's wearing pink wetsuits. I mean, I don't know if he's doing it strictly for like his YouTube channel or if he'd be doing that without a camera on the beach. But he's just like, when he's on a shortboard, he is ripping really hard. And then he's often riding a soft top in a pink wetsuit and like doing a barrel roll. He's doing all the things that I fantasized about doing when I was in high school, drawing on my notebook. He'll do a barrel roll. He'll get up on his butt on the nose of this was a clip the other day, paddles in into this like barreling section, what looks like Salt Creek, and then like jumps up onto his butt on the nose of the board. So he's like sitting down with both all 10 toes hanging off the nose of the soft top longboard, gets barreled sitting down, comes out of the barrel on his butt, makes it. He'll get up on a finless board and do 360s, just spinning down the face of the wave all the way to the beach. He's ollieing over paddlers. Like, he's just having an absolute blast wearing novelty wetsuits and stuff. It's hilarious. He's killing it. He's killing it.
Cool. Is that your dude?
You're not in?
No, I'm in. He's flying his freak flag. It's good.
He's not my Duke.
Oh.
But I was just
why'd you bring it up?
Following any of it.
Oh, no. I'm not.
Are you anti-Kalani? No, I don't know what face you're giving me right now.
No.
You are so dismayed.
No, I mean.
I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Off air and then on Instagram. Okay, so getting back to it. My Duke is.
Yeah.
My kook is obvious. My kook is Gabriel Medina for all the reasons that I ranted about a minute ago.
And his dad.
Hate that guy.
Hate's too strong a word. I don't hate anybody.
So now
but it's fun to dislike him.
Now I'm going to get whipped with all of the vitriol of the Brazilian fan base because I guess they went nuts.
They did.
Like, they went crazy. The real story here that we haven't talked about is that Caio Abelli had been receiving death threats.
Oh, my God. We didn't. Why didn't we talk about that?
So Gabriel has this huge, ravenous following.
Yes.
Really doesn't even, I would imagine, doesn't really care about surfing. They're just, they're just they look at him as this icon.
Yes.
You know,
he's like a boy band from Japan.
Totally. And Brazilian fans are just mad about him.
Right.
And so even though Caio is also Brazilian, they were just fully ripping
That's what Gabe is. Gabe is the Brazilian boy band.
Yeah, totally. So he's the one man.
We can just refer to him as the Brazilian boy band.
He's the Brazilian Bieber.
The Brazilian Bieber.
The Biebs.
The Biebs. Brazilian Biebs.
The Biebs. Lost complete touch with reality.
That's what we're going to tell him from now on. The Brazilian Biebs. How'd he do in his heat?
Brazo Biebs. I heard that he just showed up 30 minutes late in his Ferrari, threw an egg at Caio Abelli, and then demanded that he win the heat.
Brazo Biebs.
That's what he does.
Is he on the Kardashians?
Because he's entitled.
He should be on the Kardashians.
Next season, see if he can work a deal with Chris Jenner, where he like does a side story is Kendall like sleeps with a pro surfer, and there's all these rumors about it.
Okay, move forward.
Anyways, the Brazilian Biebs is my kook for all the reasons I've already stated. Now, my Duke, Caio Abelli. Caio literally isn't on tour this year and has created more disruptions for the world title race in event after event. He has no sponsors. He's on DHDs now, which are working really well for him. He's taking out world title contenders at every event. Completely.
I think Doherty wrote in Surfer about this event too, that Caio is the one guy that probably should have received the injury wild card, but he didn't because John and
Kelly
got the injury wild card.
Exactly. So he got the
Caio's like the ultimate underdog.
Totally. And he just
he's requalifying through the CT, isn't he?
And he's reinstated that every step of the way.
Oh, he fully deserves it. I mean, he is beyond the comeback surfer of the year. He's almost like created a new category for himself. It should be called the Caio Award.
It should be called the Caio Award. And the WSL, it almost makes me think that their thing is so screwed up. Like, their ranking system and the way that people get picked for things is just fraught with flaws. Time and time again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. We've restated it a bunch.
All right.
But, Caio, you are the Duke of the year, not just the week. And then my must-see moment, by the way, Joe G, the filmmaker, I'm a big fan of. He works for Globe, and he's been slowly releasing a film in multiple parts over the course of the year. Part 4 with Creed McTaggart just dropped. So, Cult of Freedom, the Creed part, is available as of 12 hours ago.
Killer.
Via the internet. We'll put it on spitpodcast.com.
Love it. All right. Well, it was a short show. Was it an hour? How long was it?
Hour and 9.
Okay.
If we had showed up on time, they would have got the full 90.
Man. I have a boardroom show with Wayne Rich, which is live. You probably have quite a few shows out there which are available for enjoyment, listening.
And then
Instagram, your Surf Splendor. I'm Boardroom Show.
Is Jeff Devine's show going out on Monday?
I hope so.
Okay, cool.
I'm also interviewing JoJo Roper and then this other guy, the skateboard guy, I'm doing Thursday. I'm kind of booked.
A skateboard guy?
Yeah.
That sounds fun. Just a skateboard
guy? His name's John O'Malley, and he's written a book called Urethane Revolution.
Oh, about the about wheels?
The beginning of the urethane wheel, yeah.
Wow. I'm in.
We'll see.
I'm in.
Could be good. Could be bad. I don't know.
Sweet.
Okay, until next time. Adios and aloha.
I see myself on TV. I'm a faker, a paper clown. It's clear to all my friends that I habitually lie. I just bring them down. I claim fullness to exaggeration, but the truth lies in my frustration. The children of the night, they all pass me by. Got to trust myself in brandy and sleep or high. But however much I bruise, there ain't no way.
responsibility. All the problems that screw me up, really down to him or me. My ego will just confuse me. Someday it's gonna up and use me. Dish me out another tailor-made compliment. Tell me about some destiny I can't prevent. And however much I squirm, there ain't no way out. There ain't no way out. I don't care what you say, boy. There ain't no way out. Won't somebody tell me how to get out of this place? Take no blame. I just can't face my failure.